Mexico's state-run oil company has been the source of wealth and also now controversy. Mexico's president wants to open the struggling oil monopoly to foreign investors. Critics on the left have denounced the plan as a privatization of the nation's oil wealth. But the president and top officials within the state company, Pemex, say without radical changes, Mexico will run out of oil in less than a decade. NPR's Jason Beaubien reports from Mexico City.
Just about everyone who's weighed in on the Pemex debate agrees that the Mexican oil monopoly is in crisis. Production of crude is falling dramatically. In July, output at Mexico's largest oil field, Cantarell, was off 37% from the year before. Pemex exploration efforts have fallen flat. By the company's own estimates, what was once the world's sixth largest oil producer could exhaust its proven reserves in the next 10 years. Some other analysts say they could be gone in less than seven. Pemex's refining and pipeline infrastructure is also in trouble. Despite being a major oil exporter, Mexico imports 40% of its gasoline because Pemex doesn't have the capacity to refine its own crude. And oil revenues fund almost half of Mexico's federal budget, so the crisis at Pemex has become a crisis for the nation. Debate over President Felipe Calderón's reform plan has dragged on for months. Calderón's proposal, among other things, would allow foreign companies to drill in deep water in the Gulf of Mexico, something Pemex doesn't currently have the technology to do on its own.
Pemex no es el problema. Es falso decir que Pemex es el problema y necesita ser rescatado.
Alberto Montoya Martín del Campo, a professor of political and social science at the Iberoamericana University, testified recently before the Energy Committee of the Mexican Senate. Montoya said Pemex is not the problem. He said the problem is that for the last two decades, various administrations have used the state-run company as a cash cow and failed to reinvest in new infrastructure and exploration. And he says the billions of dollars generated by Pemex has been a stagnating rather than a stimulating force on Mexico's economy.
Todo ello le impide al país convertirse en una potencia económica.
All of this has blocked the country from becoming an economic power, he says. He went on to argue that the reforms proposed by Calderón are too narrow and won't significantly change the oil company. Others, however, say Calderón's plan goes too far and allows too much foreign involvement in Mexican oil.
Creemos que ya en esos momentos la propuesta de Calderón no prosperó, no avanzó.
We believe the proposal of Calderón is a failure, says Senator Graco Ramirez of the left-wing PRD, or the Party of the Democratic Revolution. It will not advance and it will not be approved because the PRD and the PRI are not going to support the privatization of refineries and pipelines. The PRI is the former ruling party. Both the PRI and the PRD have now put forward their own rival reform plans. The Pemex debate has in many ways been an act of political theater. Odón de Buen, an energy analyst in Mexico City, says this has been useful in that it's made politicians and ordinary people think about Mexico's looming energy crisis. But he says the debate can't go on forever.
Every month, every year that we don't agree postpones the solution. So we may be running out of oil before we get to what this reform is promising.
And De Buen says the debate about Pemex has focused far too much on fossil fuels. De Buen and some others are arguing that this is an opportunity for Mexico to look at its energy needs for the coming decades, and they want more focus to be placed on developing alternative energy sources. Jason Beaubien, NPR News, Mexico City.
When you hear the sound of the bird we're about to broadcast, you may know that sound even if you don't know the creature's name. Its voice is turned up in a movie or two, and it is the latest wildlife we will listen to as part of a series you could only get on the radio. It's called Sounds Wild. In Australia, wildlife expert David Stewart has been recording the kookaburra.
You get these sounds at daylight, so it's a very common sound in the Australian bush that you'll hear these kookaburras start up just after daylight or even before daylight, but it's usually very early in the morning when they make this sort of song. It's the largest kingfisher in the world. So if you took a measurement, it'd be about 20 inches long. And it's sort of whitish around the head and on the breast, and brownish on the wings and the primaries. In this group that we're listening to here, there'd probably be four or five birds. It's sort of letting other kookaburras in the area know that this is their territory. So they get together, they have a bit of a chat, then they go into the full laughter song. It is a very happy sound. I think they're just waking up in the morning and they're feeling great, and they're just letting other kookaburras around know that this is their territory.
The kookaburra and other sounds in our series come from the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. NPR's Christopher Joyce collected them for Morning Edition, and you can hear other sounds in this series by going to npr.org.
Send children to camp this summer, you might have a few expectations that they would make new friends, have fun, maybe get a few freckles. But how about a 9-year-old learning how to make biodiesel fuel or insulate a house with recycled materials? Do they charge union rates? NPR's Jenny Gold reports on a Maryland camp that's putting a green twist on summer.
A typical day at Camp Kaleva for most campers includes rafting, kayaking, or rock climbing. But this group, part of a program called Building Green, has another kind of adventure in mind.
All right, Building Green, don't forget to grab all your stuff. This is our stuff.
12 campers file off the bus carrying brown bag lunches, hammers, handsaws, and drills. They're spending their week of summer camp learning about green design and alternative energy. Last year, the group built composting toilets in a treetop classroom. This year, they're building a new environmentally friendly office for the camp. The construction site is on the other side of a creek, so the kids start the day with a trip across in a rickety wooden raft. They load up their gear and climb aboard. Two little girls jump into the water and hang off the edge of the raft, kicking their legs to propel it forward. They could have just taken the bus a little further to get to the same place. But the most important thing here is being green, even if it takes a while to reach the shore. When they finally get there, the kids leap off the raft and get to work.
A little faster on the trigger, a little faster on the trigger. Okay, and then just follow that line.
That's Omar Hakim, or Mo as the kids call him. With one master's degree in architecture and another in environmental sustainability, he's in charge of the project. Some of this is real manual labor, and the kids' parents are paying close to $500 a week. But once a week, and today is that special day, the kids move beyond their jobs building green and into the world of alternative fuel. So after lunch, they head over to the reactor room. That's the barn where Kaleva turns leftover cooking oil from restaurants in the nearby downtown of Poolsville into actual biodiesel used to fuel camp vehicles.
You know what? You can grow any type of oil to run in a diesel engine.
Matt Markoff is a Kaleva camp director turned biodiesel wizard.
Right now we're making biodiesel, which is diesel made out of vegetable oil that they make French fries. You guys like French fries?
Right now, Markoff makes about 100 gallons a week here. That's enough to fuel the Kaleva farm equipment and a couple of trucks. But with bigger biodiesel machinery on the way, Markoff thinks he'll be able to triple that.
The goal is that next year, we will be able to run 20% of all the fuel that we use will be biodiesel.
Including the camp's fleet of 20 buses. The kids can't help much here in the reactor room because the chemicals are toxic. But Markoff wants them to understand exactly how this process works.
Do you guys want to pump some grease?
Yeah!
All right, come on in here.
Awesome.
First, he explains, they gather waste vegetable grease from restaurants and pump it into the processing tank. They heat the oil to 130 degrees Fahrenheit and test a sample to find out how much lye and methanol they have to add to turn the grease into fuel.
11 grams of my catalyst to every liter of grease. You guys get that?
The oil and catalysts are mixed, allowed to separate, and then...
Up top is biodiesel. Beautiful, clear, gorgeous biodiesel.
They move the crude biodiesel to the wash tank, where it's rinsed with rainwater, and aerated in the drying tank. The kids are captivated.
Vegetable oil is converted into fuel that can be run on all diesel engines, which is pretty cool.
15-year-old Jacob Galesian is one of the oldest kids in Building Green.
It is kind of complicated. A few stuff went right over my head, but I got the basics.
And that kind of response is exactly what Mo is looking for. The kids aren't just having fun, he says. They're also learning.
Well, surprisingly enough, you know, kids come back and they go, oh, do you remember when you were telling us about how much water infiltrates through turf grass? And I was like, I can't believe you remember that.
Matt Markoff says Building Green and the biodiesel project are going to help the whole camp become more energy independent.
When they get on a Kaleva bus and they drive to camp and it smells like French fries and, you know, then, I mean, we are very much going to make it aware that our, you know, buses are running on biodiesel.
By next summer, just riding the bus at Camp Kaleva will be a greening experience. Jenny Gold, NPR News.